How's everyone doing today? Good. I am excited about today. We've been doing this series. This is the fourth week of our series that we're calling Family. And for those of you who haven't been here for the whole series, I wanted to kind of give it a little bit of context for you. So the purpose of this series is to learn about how we should treat each other as the family of God. Now, we're all children of God. Whether people recognize it or not, every single human being is a child of God. They're a creation of God. But I don't want to just talk to you about that from my perspective. And I don't want you to hear about it from just somebody else's perspective. I want to hear about these family values from the perspective of you guys. So each week we've had two different speakers come up, and it's kind of been a little bit more of an interview style. So if it's your first time with us today, it's not always like this, but we have really been loving this series because we're getting to hear from a variety of different perspectives, different voices about these things in our lives and these values on how we can treat each other better. So today, and we're pulling all of these values out of Romans 12. So your challenge for this month is to read the book of Romans. And the first week, if you want to go back and listen to the first week, we kind of summarized very, 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 very quickly the entire book of Romans. It's a big book, so there's a lot to summarize, so I talked really fast. But there's a really good amount of information in there about how we should treat each other, because Rome had one of the first multicultural churches in the Christian movement. And so Paul wrote this letter to encourage them toward unity, to encourage them away from diversity in their beliefs. Like, you can be diverse, you can be unique, but you don't have to be uniform. You don't all have to be the same. We have to learn to respect each other's differences because we all have the same goal. And that goal is to love God and love others. So from each week, we've pulled out one scripture from Romans 12. And this week, it's, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So from this verse, we're going to be talking about, first of all, relational equality. So I have Kathy Hickey this morning. Are you ready? Y'all, she's so excited. All right. Thank you. All right. All right. So Miss Kathy is going to tell us a little bit about her experiences with relational equality. Now, I kind of mentioned this already, but we don't always recognize the fact that Christianity was the first multicultural religion. If you look at history, religion and culture are so closely intertwined that it's almost impossible to separate the two in most cultures. But then you have this guy named Jesus, and he came along, and he came to not just save the Jews, but also the Gentiles. And those of you that don't know, the Gentiles are literally everyone besides Jews. So he came and he died for everyone. He made God accessible to all cultures, to all people, to all socioeconomic reaches, to everyone. So today we're going to talk a little bit about relational equality. And I want to kind of look over the next two topics about the book Colossians. And this is another letter that Paul wrote. And it was another letter where he was encouraging people within the church to treat each other well. There's a lot of talk about unity if you read Paul's letters. So verse 11 says, here there is no Jew, here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. So with that in mind, we're going to get started. I'm going to ask you a few questions. Oh, thank you. She knows. All right. So what Paul is saying here is that there is no social distinction of inequality that has not been erased by Jesus' death and resurrection. See, we believe that every person has innate value within themselves that transcends men's opinions and distinctions. See, in our Father's family, in the family of God, we're all equal. We all have value, and we all have a voice, because we're all God's children. So, Ms. Kathy, what does relational equality mean to you?
Well, as she said, there are tons of scriptures about how to treat each other. But I like to think of it as just the way of Jesus. And since we are his hands and feet, then we are supposed to show equality and love to everybody. That's it.
Short and sweet. I like it. All right. Tell us how you have experienced relational equality in your life.
First of all, right here. Right here is so awesome because I've mostly been in patriarchal type churches where they have a head pastor who's a man, the staff is men. I was in a church for 20 years. The deacons and the elders were all men, and the ushers were all men. You had to be a man to pass the collection plate. And when I went to Journey, I was so excited the day I got up and I saw a woman pass the bucket. And I said, I want to do that. And I really enjoyed doing that until I got dizzy one day and fell into a chair. But anyway, it's just refreshing. There's no misogyny. Everybody can use their gifts here. And I love it. It's freeing. You want me to tell them how I experience relational equality in my life?
Yes.
Well, first of all, I'm going to go way, way back before y'all were born because I'm as old as dirt. And I'm going to tell you about growing up in Mountain Home, which is north central Arkansas, nearly to the Missouri line. And it was an all-white town, but my parents did a really good job of trying to prepare me for what the world was like. And I was a little girl in 1957 when they had the desegregation crisis in Little Rock and called out the National Guard. It was so ugly, all the protesters. And I remember to this day, my mother said, this is a shameful day for Arkansas. And it has given us a terrible reputation. And then my next memory was that we would always go and stay at the Arlington in Hot Springs when my dad went to the press convention. And she would always get acquainted with one of the maids, they called them, that had a child, a black child about my age, and we would have a play date. And we always stayed in the room all day, had a good time. But I never could figure out why we didn't go to the pool, because I normally spent all my time at the pool. And now I realize they would not have allowed her in the pool, even if she was a guest. Not only that, but now I know that the public pools were segregated. And when they finally had to integrate them, a lot of them just closed because they didn't want to. So there were some crazy things going on. I guess the one that impacted me the most, I was about junior high. And I found out what a sundown town was, if you've heard that, because a construction worker came to Mountain Home. They were building our first new model motel. And it got to be time to, you know, go back to the motel, go stay somewhere. Nobody in town. We had all these little motels. It was a tourist area. Nobody would let him stay. And they called my dad because he was the mayor and said, what are we going to do? And so he went and got him and brought him home. But he wouldn't come in. My mother had to fix him a bed on the screened-in porch because he was just not comfortable coming in. And I remember thinking, but I could have slept in my sister's room. He could have had my bed. And it just really affected me. I cried in bed that night because of the injustice of the world. And then I came to U of O for college, and by my sophomore year, I had a black roommate because we were real good friends. Then that was the year that Martin Luther King got killed, and that changed their lives. The black students, there were very few. They were so devastated. They got together, and they decided they wouldn't talk to any white people. Well, she still talked to me in the room, but when we would be on the sidewalk, she would snub me and not talk to me. And that really hurt. And I was talking to Carrie about it, and she said, oh, so you experience discrimination. And I thought, I'm going to have to think about that. And you are so right. I understood their hurt. But it's like, how unfair that the color of my skin, you know, they wouldn't even talk to me. But that's how discrimination works. It's ridiculous. Now, I know talk of Martin Luther King sounds like ancient history to y'all, but it doesn't seem that long ago to me. And anyway, are things much better now? We watched George Floyd be murdered before our eyes. And now that people have video cameras, we see it all the time. We may not see cross burnings. We may not see lynching from trees. But we see a lot of black people getting killed for no other reason than horrible prejudice. And that has got to stop.
So we've talked a lot about, like, you've experienced racial inequality. Mm-hmm. Like, you've seen it happen throughout your life.
Yeah.
So have you seen any good examples of people treating each other with respect?
I'll have to stop and talk about this. Whitney, stand up, please. Whitney's my friend. We belong to a group. She's pretty well the organizer, called the United Diversity League. We have had so much fun getting together and promoting unity. And we had this awesome, we had two awesome rallies last summer. But one of them, it makes me cry to think about it. And I was serving pizza. I missed it. I saw it on TV. But one of the counter protesters came over and was mad for that we were doing that and talking to Whitney. And I don't know what she said because I wasn't there, but they ended up hugging each other. And it was on TV that night. Yay, Whitney. Yeah, yeah. And she was sane. And I got to talk. And this is a great group. And we're doing a lot of good. Okay? Okay. Can I talk about economic?
Absolutely.
Okay. That was racial. But now I'm going to talk about economic inequality. Being middle class, I never knew about poverty. And one year, I was with my job, I was doing a lot of multicultural stuff. And so I decided to go as a sponsor with a youth group to Waco, Texas, to a three-day poverty simulation. I thought it would be fun. Boy, was I wrong. You know, you walk around, no bed, no change of clothes, no food. I've never been so hungry in my life. We were with some Baylor kids that were doing it for a class, and we had a list of things we were supposed to do. Well, one of those things was to beg. And I watched them. Some of them would go to a restaurant door, back door, and ask for food. Some of them would walk up to people on the street and ask for money. And I thought, I'll never do that. I don't even like to ask for a refill of my tea at a restaurant. So I couldn't imagine doing that. But I woke up the last morning and I thought two things. I need a cup of coffee, bad. And if I'm ever going to beg, this is the time. So I walked down to a convenience store, and I don't know what I thought would happen, but I walked up to this lady at the checkout, and I said, I don't have any money, but could I get a cup of coffee? And she said, no. She said, the manager won't let me do that. And I burst into tears. And so I was starting to leave, and there's a group of old guys drinking coffee like my husband does every day at Hardee's, and those guys do not miss a thing that happens. And he saw me, and he said, oh, get your coffee. I'll pay for it. Well, I got my coffee, wiped my tears, and I went over, and I was going to, like, pat him like you do and say, thank you, sir. And when I went close to him, he flinched. And then he said, okay, you got your coffee. Now go on, go on, like I was a dog. And all the way back, I cried, and I thought, what would it be like to live in poverty? I knew I was going to leave. I knew we were going to go to Chili's and eat anything we wanted. What would it be like if you had to depend on other people or depend on the government for your basic needs, while people that are dishing out half the time resent you for it. And I think I would just curl up in a ball and die. I admire people that do it. They got to be very, very strong. I think I'm supposed to... May I digress a minute? My granddaughter has an exchange student named Gaitlin. Please stand up. Gaitlin, thank you, is from Estonia. Estonia borders Russia, very, very near Ukraine. And we're a little concerned. And so when you're praying for Ukraine like we all are, go ahead and pray for Estonia while you're at it, okay? Thank you. She's precious. So, as for poverty, if you have money, and you may not, but if you do, be generous with it. We are supposed to give what we can to people who need it. That's just Jesus' way. If you have two coats, you give one away. Take food to interfaith. Donate when the church tells us of our need, backpack, people that have had a crisis. Help people with their rent if they're about to be evicted. Loan your car out to someone who needs it. Fill up someone's gas tank because gas is like gold for people who need to get to work and don't have the money. And if you don't have any friends that need your help, maybe make one, because I know we can't do everything, but, you know, Andy Stanley always said, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. And my final word. Seriously, this Women in Unity group is going to be great. Aisha is going to teach us about liberation theology. Some of my victory friends, I love y'all. Thank you for being here. Hopefully we'll come over and we will have a unified women's group. And we're going to meet twice a month. We've been meeting on Zoom, but we are ready to get together now. And we will do that next, not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday night. It's just, I know everyone's busy, but it's just twice a month. So even if you have to get a babysitter, it's going to be worth going to. Thank you for this church being here, because the one I was in kind of fell apart, and y'all have made me feel so welcome, and I love you all.
Thank you, Miss Kathy. So she mentioned a couple of different situations that we deal with that cause people to feel inequality, racial inequality, social economic inequality, but there's also like age inequality, gender inequality. There are things like this that people face on a daily basis, and if they can't come to a church community to feel loved, and if the church community can't go out into the world and love people, then we're not completing the main mission, which is to love God and love others. So as we look on into Colossians 3, you know, we read about how, as part of a family of God, it's important that we learn to treat each other well, regardless of differences and offenses. And it says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves together with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Love. That's what we're talking about today. Loving others as equals. But sometimes there's something else that comes between people, unforgiveness. When there's an offense that happens, the Bible tells us to seek out that person and to make amends with them. And there's a whole lot of different scenarios that we could get into with this, but we're going to hear the perspective of Raiden England this morning on how she's learned to forgive. All right, so just to kind of summarize a little bit what we're talking about here. So Jesus gave us the ministry of reconciliation. So it's through Jesus that we learn how to forgive, how to enter into relationship and re-enter into relationship with people. This restoration process requires a willingness to genuinely forgive others. Jesus taught us to pray for forgiveness and forgive others. See, the heart of the Father is for his sons and daughters to return home to him, to rejoin him in relationship, and we have to be in relationship with one another. Now, if you're a parent and you have more than one kid, if your kids aren't getting along, is there peace in your home? No. Does it affect your relationship with your children? It does. The Father wants us to join together. He wants us to be able to have forgiveness in our hearts in order to be able to be in full relationship with him. The path to a restored relationship with the Father is often through restored relationships with one another. See, we choose to walk in genuine forgiveness with one another. We forgive because we have been forgiven. So in Mark 11:25, it says, "And when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive them so that your Father in heaven may forgive you your sins." Y'all, that's a big deal, isn't it? We have to learn to forgive one another so we can have a full relationship with our Father. So, Raiden, we're going to learn a little bit about genuine forgiveness. So what does genuine forgiveness mean to you?
To me, I think it means just really being able to truly, fully love others, even though no matter the wrongs that they've done to you, because every single person in this room has been stabbed in the back or had their trust betrayed, something someone has done to you. And in that moment, maybe even not just in the moment, you never want to trust them again. You may even say you hate them. But to have peace ourselves, you have to forgive. You have to be able to love them, because in honesty, it's not going to bother them that you haven't forgiven them. It's only going to hurt you. So you have to be able to love, and you have to remember that, I mean, we hurt Jesus, and Jesus still forgives us. He still died for us. I saw something one day, I don't remember where it was, but I mean, I broke down in tears because of it. It said, imagine if every sin you made, every wrong that you did, was another time that Jesus was whipped. And he still loves us. He still died for us. He didn't have to. But he did. And if Jesus could go through that for every single one of us, we can do it in our lifetime.
That's good. How have you experienced genuine forgiveness in your life?
When I was talking to Carrie, I told her that I felt like the biggest way that I'd experienced it was just learning to forgive many, many people in my life. And she made me realize during our talk that I also had been on a journey to learn to forgive myself. But my biggest deal was that when someone hurt me, when my trust was betrayed, I built up walls. Not just from that person, but to everyone. I didn't want to be hurt, and the people in my life that have hurt me the most were the ones that I was closest to. And so, to me, it felt like if that person, the person that I love the most, the person that seemed to want to protect me the most, could hurt me the way that they did, anyone could, and everyone could. That's how I felt. And so I'd lock down, and I didn't want to talk to anyone about it. I didn't want to forgive them. Because to me, it seemed like if I forgave them, that was just opening another door for someone to do it again. And I didn't want that to happen. And I think everyone has probably gone through that. But it's just been learning to open back up again and learning that it's just part of life. You're going to get hurt. And there's nothing you can do about that. But you can't live in your shell, because that's not living.
So you're really young. And so people here that don't know your story, that haven't walked through your story like some of us have, can you share a little bit of what your story is? You don't have to go into details, but I can vouch that you've had lots of opportunities to have to forgive in your life. But share a little bit of your story with us.
So when I was 7, my dad came and picked me and my sister up out of school. I was in 2nd grade. And I'd never lived with my dad before. I'd always lived with my mom. But, you know, my dad had, no, I'm not going to say visitations, but he worked out of town a lot. And so we would go see him on the weekends or just whenever. So him coming and picking me up out of school was very weird, very confusing. I don't ever remember it happening before. So I was getting ready to leave. And I do remember before this, he had said, y'all are going to come stay with me for a while. Well, my 2nd grade teacher was my 2nd cousin. And, I was telling my friends why. I was like, no, I'm going to be back. Like, I'm just going to stay with my dad for a while. And she said, no, Raiden, you're moving. And, I mean, I was 7, but I still knew it was weird. It was wrong. It wasn't normal. So something was going on. And, it scared me. It really did. But for a long time, I didn't know why. The timeline is really weird for me. I mean, it's not straight. I remember not getting to see my mom on and off, getting to see her, getting to talk to her on the phone, and then all of a sudden I didn't get to talk to her anymore. I do remember, for a long time, I got to see my mom. I would go stay with her every other weekend, but my stepdad wasn't there. And he was at work, or he was just somewhere else. It was all very strange. It was just very strange, very confusing as a child. And what was also so much more confusing was that everyone else acted like everything was normal. I mean, I felt like I was going crazy because everyone else acted like everything was completely fine. When I would ask any questions, a lot of the times I just got a no. Like, it was a direct no. There wasn't an answer. It was just no. And I was just like, I was stunned. I didn't know what to do. Even as a child, you would think that me being so young, I would kind of just be able to adapt to it. Yeah, I get to go live with my dad, but it was weird. Like, I knew it wasn't right. Something was going on, and it didn't make sense. And it felt like I was going crazy because everyone else was okay, and I wasn't. I don't remember when I started going, but I would go to my school counselor every single day. Every day, I'd just go in there, and I'd just cry because I didn't know what was going on. I missed my mom. I missed my stepdad. I was confused, and it wasn't the impact it had on me. I sobbed. She would just hold me in her lap, and I would sob. And I would ask her, you know, what is going on? I don't understand. And me and my mom have always been, like, best friends, okay? She's been my rock my entire life. And I would just tell her, I miss my mom. I don't understand. Why can't I be with my mom? And she would just, at first she didn't know. But she did, one day she called me to her office and she said, this was after I'd found out a little more. I got bits and pieces from family members that would break down and accidentally say things that they weren't supposed to say because no one was supposed to say anything to me or my sister. I think my granny was probably the first person that I ever broke down. The things she said, I don't think she should have said them. She didn't word it the right way, but I remember we went to her house and she broke down and she just kneeled at my lap and said, your stepdad is doing things that you girls can't be around. And we tried to convince your mom to leave him and keep y'all, but she wouldn't. And so you have to be with your dad, which, of course, she was sobbing, and it was a lot louder, and it was very, it was kind of traumatizing because, yeah, not so gentle, it was harder to understand what she said, but that was the gist of it. So So I think that was the first time I ever realized, okay, so it's him, my stepdad. Well, I told my counselor that, and so she ended up going to, like, a court meeting. And she somehow convinced the judge to let her tell me what was going on. So she comes back, and she calls me to her office, and she says, your stepdad, I'm trying not to say names because my brother's here, but your stepdad is on drugs, and his tests are coming back positive. And I, you know, positive, that's a good thing, right? Well, I didn't know that. She said no. I was like, wait, so, I mean, if they're coming back positive, then what's the issue? And she was like, she had to explain to me, and I was like, oh. Well, then I was like, so when do I get to go back with her if his tests come back negative? And she said, Raiden, you're never going to live with your mom again. That, I mean, I think I'd probably call that my first heartbreak. Because, I mean, I couldn't breathe. I couldn't see. I wasn't functioning. I just broke down. I remember I cried in the floor for Lord knows how long. But, I mean, I got my crap together, and she called my sister and asked if she had any questions, and obviously she didn't. I mean, Gracie didn't have a clue what was going on. She's always, her and my dad have been closer than me and my dad were, so, I mean, getting to live with Dad, that was a dream come true for her. But, so she didn't have any questions. She was okay. So I ended up going back to class, and I think I was probably in fourth or fifth grade when that happened. So, you know, I'd just been told, you're never going to live with your mom again. That's fantastic. Great. Love to hear that. Love that for me. Well, at that point, I wasn't getting to see my stepdad. And I think, I don't remember. Gosh. I remember on my 10th birthday, I finally got to see him again. We finally got to see him again. So things were amazing for, what, 5 years? He was clean for 5 years. That we got to see him? Okay. So he was clean for 5 years. We got to be around him for 3. I think. And I did notice things were starting to get weird again. It was right after his birthday, right before Christmas. We went to my Gigi and Poppy's house, and my mom and my Gigi and Poppy they brought us to the living room, and they sat us down. And they just said, we have something we need to talk to y'all about. And me and Gracie were both like, what's going on? We were clearly old enough to understand the situation at that point. And I don't remember who said it. The whole scenario is very blurry. But they just said, he relapsed. And I went numb. Like, I went absolutely numb. I didn't cry for a minute. Gracie broke down. I mean, it was just, I remember my Gigi, like, holding me, hugging me. We all just kind of hugged, and I was just stunned. I didn't know what to do because, I mean, the relationship I had with him was like no other. I mean, we immediately, I can't even say clicked. I don't remember. It was just, I'd always felt safe. I always felt safe. I always felt protected. I have my dad, but he was another father figure to me, and he was very important, one of the most important people I've ever known. He had probably the greatest impact on my life and taught me so many things and helped me through a lot of things. And so hearing that he relapsed, I just, second heartbreak. Things are starting to get blurry. I know him and my mom separated for a while, 3 months. They separated for a while. He was still getting to see my little brother, though. That was one of the biggest things. She didn't want to take his son from him, and she didn't want my brother to not have a dad. So I don't remember. Once again, I don't remember. Well,
we can fast forward a little bit through that part because I know it's a little bit blurry. So,
yeah.
So, all things together, the people that you were closest to and trusted the most in your life, you felt like all of a sudden there was no trust.
Yeah. Thank you for getting me on.
And now we know that, how long ago you were able to come and you live full time with your mom again?
Yeah, it was in September.
I have personally witnessed in the past just couple months forgiveness in you. And I want you to tell, like, how can we do that? How can we look at a situation where we have been hurt, where we have been offended, where we have experienced heartbreak with someone close to us? And even if you can't go face to face with that person and ask for forgiveness, how do you find that forgiveness in your heart?
Okay, so first of all, I'm going to say you have to be right with the Lord. It was not possible for me until my relationship with the Lord started healing, because I got to the point where I felt completely and entirely alone in the world. Even going to church every day, I would ask, what if we're doing this for nothing? What if he's not out there? What if he's not there? Because at this point, I don't feel like I've got anyone, and I thought he was always supposed to be there. It didn't seem possible, and every day I was thinking, what if we're sitting here blessing our food to something that doesn't exist? It seemed impossible for someone so great to allow the kind of pain that I was feeling as a child. It didn't seem fair. It didn't seem possible. And I got to the point, I didn't care about anything. I was doing whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. Anytime I would get in trouble, my dad and stepmom would always, obviously they would bring Jesus into it, because why wouldn't you? And I would just sit there thinking, why does it matter? Why does it matter? I don't care anymore. I don't want to hear about that, because the one person that was never supposed to abandon me did. So why does it matter how he feels if I do the things that I'm not supposed to? I was. And my stepmom, I was hardening my heart because I'd been hurt over and over again. And I couldn't handle it. I could not handle it. And so the first step is just to be right with him. And I definitely think my relationship with him started healing once I moved back in with my mom. I've always felt, it's always been a different kind of love here in a church like this. Journey was where it all started. Just the energy, the family there really, it helped me through it. Whenever I stepped into that church building, especially Journey Darnell, it was just the weight lifted off my shoulders. It was relief for just a few hours. And I loved going to church. And so Project Church, with Matt and Carrie and Aisha, all of the people that came from Journey, that this church has been, a lifesaver. And so the opportunities I had here, being able to worship up here, because, song has always been my music is, the way to my heart. And being able to worship the way we do here, it's really helped. And just being around these people, that was a start. And I started feeling again. When I say I was numb, for a period of time, there's a period of time not too long ago that I do not remember. I remember nothing. I was depressed. And I didn't want to not be depressed at that point. I got to the point where the only comfort I found was in the sadness. If I was having a good day, I'd go in my room, turn the lights off, and listen to sad music. I wanted to be sad. And I went to counseling. And yes, I wanted the counseling, but I didn't want the counseling to work. I wanted to be sad. Depression and just feeling, I felt guilty about being happy. And so definitely moving back in with my mom and being in this church, being with these people, the support system has brought me out of it. I started, never mind, I'm not going to talk about that. So, yeah, it definitely was. So, I was up here singing one day, and some people know, some people don't. But for those that don't, we didn't have lyrics. And we were trying to jump back into a song, and nobody seemed to know the lyrics, and I did. And I hadn't sang many times here. Was it my first time? No, it was. It doesn't matter. Somewhere first-ish, okay? So I didn't feel like it was my place to try and lead something. I didn't feel like that was my place. I was like, you know what, they'll get it sorted out. But it felt like something was literally laying on my chest. And, like, I kept, like, going like I was about to sing, but then I would stop myself. And eventually I was just like, you know what, I'm going to sing. And so I started singing, and once everyone was back into it, I broke down. I could not stop crying. I had to cover my face. Like, I was sweating, and it was the Holy Ghost. It was. And the song, I don't even remember what the song was. It was about sins and chains being broken and, anyways, forgiveness. And I've sinned. And like I said, for the longest time, I didn't feel bad about it. And that was the first time that I truly accepted that I was guilty, that I realized I was a sinner, period. Whether the things I did led me to healing or not, I still did them, and they were still wrong, and I went to extreme points. And in that song, I realized that what I'd done was wrong, and I truly felt guilty about it, but I also realized that he loved me anyways. And that was also a big thing. So that, I thank you for reminding me of that, because that definitely was my turning point. Yeah.
Okay. So, one word answer.
Okay.
When you not only forgive someone, but accept God's forgiveness for you, what feeling does that give you?
Relief.
Relief. Thank you, Raiden. So, the number one thing that I get from Raiden's story, and I'm sure everybody heard different things that they connected with the most from her story, but the number one thing that I heard was that she was able to start forgiving others when she accepted God's forgiveness for herself. Without that step, we cannot forgive others. We cannot truly mend brokenness. We cannot truly move forward in relationship with one another. We can't earn His forgiveness. And you know we don't deserve it. But when we can accept it, then we can start moving forward. The band's going to come back up, and we're going to do a couple more songs. And y'all, while we do these songs, I just want you to just take this time and just be grateful for forgiveness. Be grateful that we have unity as the body of Christ, that together we can be more. It's not just about us. It's not just about our walk with God. It's about learning to walk with others. I have one more scripture here. Back in Colossians 3, it says, "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as a member of one body you were called to peace, and be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all for the name, in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to the Father through him." You know, Raiden said she felt relief. But you know where that relief comes from? Peace. It's finding that peace, that joy, that feeling that when we don't have it, you know you don't have it. And it's finding that, accepting that, and living in that. And the only way that we have that peace is through God's forgiveness. So let's be thankful for that. So stand and let's sing.